Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Republicans Dan Proft and Chris Roebling, and Democrats David Lundy and R. Craig Sauter. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to check out the show on the internet, it's www.beyondthebeltway.com. Tonight, of course, there's only one political story in America. It is the announcement by Mitt Romney yesterday that he has selected seven-term Congressman Paul Ryan of Wisconsin to be his running mate. It was one of the names that has been floated around for the last several weeks. It's usually been listed as one of Romney's riskier choices. We'll talk about that this evening on the broadcast, but I do want to get a response. And again, tonight we have two Democrats and two Republicans, because we're going to really get into the down and dirty of this campaign. First of all, in Politics 101, the first thing you've got to do is solidify the base. Chris Roebling, does this choice do that for Mitt Romney?
Oh, there's no question about it. This is a home run for solidifying the base, and I think it's going to be a home run for winning all of the election in November. And when I say all, I mean holding on to the House, taking the Senate, and, of course, most important, unseating Barack Obama.
Dan Proft is our other Republican this evening. Dan, what's your answer to the same question?
Yeah, I mean, I think Ryan is seen as a conservative superstar, kind of the intellectual leader of the Republican of the House Republicans. I think it's a surprisingly and pleasantly surprisingly bold choice by Romney. I had been saying for the last 5 months I thought it was going to be Rob Portman, so I had set the bar low for Romney, and he certainly exceeded it with the Ryan choice. So I think this is very encouraging, both for Ryan to be on the ticket, but also what it says about Romney's commitment to big transformational ideas. To frame out the last 90 days of this race.
It impresses you and some of those that have been lukewarm to that candidacy.
Yeah, I mean, in a sense, if you think about it, it makes sense for Romney because, you know, as a private equity guy, let's see, the Wisconsin model is working. Here's one of the architects that's available to me. Let's scale that model. So that, in very kind of simple terms, it makes sense.
Dave Lundy is one of our Democrats this evening. Dave, your reaction to Paul Ryan, is he the ideal target for the Democrats?
I couldn't be more pleased. This is what I was hoping for. This is what I predicted for about the last 6 weeks. Mitt Romney has, throughout the primaries, wrapped himself around the Ryan budget, and now he's wrapped himself around Paul Ryan himself. I think this creates a real clear contrast and a choice. And what's the most interesting is that the Obama campaign has been working for months to try to change this from a referendum on Barack Obama into a choice between two visions. And they got the choice. Mitt Romney gave it to him.
Our Craig Sauter also joins this evening. He is a college professor, but also probably voted Democratic a few times in your life. Your response, and would you agree with what has just been said?
Well, first of all, from the Republican point of view, I think it's a great choice because they have an attack dog here, somebody who can really be articulate and go on the stump and not take, cut through the kind of political rhetoric that will be coming his way. It did solidify the base for the Democrats. They're ecstatic about it. I mean, I've been getting emails.
Both bases. So it solidified both bases.
Yeah, so it's just elevating the quality of the candidates here and probably the quality. We've had a really horrible summer of meaningless, banter back and forth, and this sets the stage for a really serious confrontation.
Given the recent polls that came out, again, this decision was allegedly made on August 1st. It was not a reaction to some of the polls last week in some battleground states that showed Romney not doing well and losing support in some states. Does this is this really round two, day two? Has he used the Etch-a-Sketch to change everything?
Well, he hasn't used the Etch-a-Sketch, and that was a bad analogy by Eric Fernstrom, who is one of the senior officials.
But a good one by me.
It was great by you.
Yes. Used well.
But I think that gets exactly to the next step for the Romney campaign. I don't know about Dan, but I've been saying for months that the campaign is not particularly adept at either messaging or getting its messages across. I have maintained that position. I think that if the Ryan selection is followed by something of a house cleaning or a reshuffling so that there are some better people brought into the senior reaches of that campaign, then I think you're going to see a more active and a more, in my opinion, a more aggressive Romney effort. That is necessary. It won't be Ryan alone. The campaign has got to be taken up several notches to compete at the level of David Axelrod, David Plouffe.
But Romney,
I don't know about that.
But, say that again.
I don't know about that. I'm a, you know, a red diaper baby, professional liar. David Axelrod gets a lot more credit than I think he's otherwise due, as he demonstrated today at Meet the Press, where he lost his cool with some very light pushback from David Gregory, which is all David Gregory is capable of. Look, I think the interesting thing about this, it's really not step two in my view. This is a change in the way this campaign is going to be prosecuted. Frankly, we saw this in Illinois, where we had a Republican candidate for governor think you could run a race against Chicago Democrats and just say, I'm not a Chicago Democrat. The Romney campaign up until this point has been content to say, I'm not the Chicago Democrat Barack Obama, and it's not enough. He's been dying the death of a thousand cuts with tax returns, and he's a rich guy, and $120 million in advertisements by Barack Obama in swing states. He's a felon. He's a murderer even. He understands, it seems to me, with the Paul Ryan choice, that he has to make this campaign about big ideas. He has got to bring in another serious person who is willing to level with the American people and talk in some detail about entitlements and about the first principles of a party, the Republican Party, as compared to the first principles of the Democrat Party.
Another sort of political 101, politics 101, is a campaign is not a good time to educate people. But isn't that what Paul Ryan's got to do in this campaign, in your view, Dave?
I actually think it's what both campaigns have to do. First of all, you have to define your opponent. It's what the Democrats have very successfully been doing to Mitt Romney all summer long. I agree this with Chris. This has been a nightmare summer for Mitt Romney. This is the time when swift votes happened in 2004. It completely changed the dynamic. You went after your opponent's strength and turned it into a weakness. It's exactly what the Obama campaign has done. So I really think that they do need a radical change. And if they didn't, if they were 5 points up, there's no way they would have picked Paul Ryan, because there is an enormous amount of baggage that you're talking about here. The fact is that when you start to get into the details, and this is to your question about time to educate folks, when you start to get into the details, it becomes a choice that the American people, when you poll them on any of these questions, they hate most of the ideas contained in the Ryan budget. Except for the idea, the concept, that this is a balanced budget. But the fact is, Paul Ryan is not a deficit hawk. That is a fabrication. His budget balances in 2038. He voted for the Bush tax cuts that were not paid for. He voted for the wars that were not paid for. He voted for the Medicare Part D prescription drug coverage that was not paid for. The whole thing is about branding, not about facts.
I want to come back and give everybody a chance to respond to that. But most importantly, we want to hear from those listening coast to coast. 1-800-723-8229. Your reaction. First live national show that can offer your response on the selection of Paul Ryan as the running mate for Mitt Romney. 1-800-723-8289. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us this evening. We talked about solidifying the base is one thing that you should do. Politics 101 calls for. The other part in waging a national campaign is being able to reach out and appeal to independents. How do you think that's going to work out? Again, it all gets back to how he's going to be defined, but and also let's speak a little bit about the generational.
Well, let's say that the race is Romney and Obama. The race is not Joe Biden and Paul Ryan. And I think that the tasks before the campaign, they're very different. Obama is recreating at a national level something like the Harold Washington Coalition, and he's looking for very high levels of registration and very high levels of turnout And to do that, he is polarizing and demonizing people, and then he wants to mobilize those individuals. That's slightly, that's distinct, in my opinion, distinctly different from what Romney is doing. And I think that Paul Ryan really comes right in and helps with Romney, because people who are unsure at this point about Barack Obama after 4 years are, there's an increasing likelihood with every passing day or week that they're not going to vote for Obama, okay? And so that in and of itself is favorable to Romney, especially in the 13 key states. But where Ryan comes in is because of his rationality, because of his big picture vision, he's able to speak to independents and say, we've got a plan. You think spending is out of control. We agree, and I've got a plan to do something about that, whether he's a deficit hog or not. And Obama is stuck there trying to avoid attention being placed on the fact that he has no budget for 3 years and the fact that unemployment is so high, so many people are hurting, and so many people are now on the dole. So I think that Ryan is coming right in to assist Romney in dealing with the undecided independents and wayward Democrats.
Does he help generationally? Again, the decision is made at the presidential level, but because he's a young, energetic, 42-year-old guy who's running down the ramp of the Wisconsin yesterday. I mean, does that give a level of energy, just the cosmetics of the campaign, David?
You know, I'm not sure that that's going to make that big a difference. I mean, frankly, Mitt Romney is a very young 65, so I don't think that he strikes people as the way Bob Dole may have back when he ran. I think that what's far more interesting and far more potentially problematic for the Romney campaign is what's going to happen with white working class folks, particularly white working class men. Barack Obama has been hemorrhaging that vote. That has been an enormous problem. It explains what has happened in places like West Virginia, where he's astonishingly unpopular for a Democrat in what's still a largely Democratic state. And so the question becomes, getting back to this question of definition, if the since most of the budget cuts that are contained in the Ryan budget are targeted at middle class and working class folks and poor folks, and an awful lot of those folks tend to be white working class, live in places like West Virginia, if they the Obama campaign is able to turn that on the Romney folks, turn the Ryan budget on them, it has a chance to really shore up Obama's white vote and really call game over. I mean, I really think that there's a serious demographic shift, because the thing is, we can talk about the bases, which, you know, let's say for the sake of discussion, including most leaning on the independents, 48-48, you got the 4% in the middle, roughly. Politics is a game of addition. You need those, you need at least 2% of plus one of the rest. And those ideas just don't pull well with independents.
Well, I would say two things about Paul Ryan. One, he's shown an interesting ability to actually win working class white voters in his district, so that says something about his appeal. Secondly, the branding of Paul Ryan right out of the gate from the Obama campaign, because I understand most people in this country don't know him. We follow this every day because we don't have lives, but other people do, and so they don't know Paul Ryan as well, and they're going to get to know him. But this idea that Paul Ryan, as he's being, as Jim Messina and others in the Obama campaign have attempted to brand him right out of the gate, the author of the radical House Republican budget, the radical Paul Ryan. Let me tell you something. When Paul Ryan speaks and when he addresses these issues, he is not going to come across as a radical, because he isn't. And for an attack or a brand to be effective, it has to have some basis in reality. It has to be credible on its face, and that one is not going to be. So I don't think that the demagoguery that's going to come from the left about Paul Ryan's budget, where you call the empowering families with the resources to chart their own course cuts, I don't think that's going to sell.
And what about just the likability factor? Small town, Janesville, Wisconsin. Is that going to be an area where he is geographically supposed to spend some time because of the appeal?
Well, he's not on the Walmart circuit, which, you know, some 20 years ago, you and I were on this program at this time, and you were talking about Dan Quayle going on the Walmart circuit. I think you're going to see Ryan sitting down with business leaders in Los Angeles and New York and things like this. But on Dan's point, last time, in 2008, when Barack Obama won Paul Ryan's district 52%, Paul Ryan had 65%. So people who were voting for Barack Obama were also voting for Paul Ryan. And I actually ran a campaign in that district in 1984. There are inner cities in Racine and in Kenosha, and to some extent in Janesville. There's agriculture. There's light industrial. I mean, it's a very diverse district. And Paul Ryan has created a very solid base of support up there. So I agree with Dan. I think he's going to campaign very well with independents.
Part of that is likability, isn't it, Craig?
He's a fresh face. He's a fresh face. He's energetic. He's like an athletic type. So he attracts young people, I think, but not – you know, these 4%, who are they? They're pretty problematic. Do they really care about these policy issues that we're talking about? Probably not. You know, and they're going to look at personalities and people, and that's what they're going to vote upon.
But you think it's a plus at the moment?
I think it's a plus.
Again, in a debate, you've covered lots of debates. You've written about debates one-on-one when it's he and Joe Biden. Give me an edge in your view.
Well, I give the edge to – well, I'm supposed to be speaking as a Democrat here, but I give the edge to Ryan because I've seen him, you know, go face-to-face with the president, and he's not – he doesn't back off. He does have, quote, rational points, but coldly rational, I would say. He comes out of the Ayn Rand school of – so he's somewhat of a true believer here.
Well, he's also comes out of the Thomas Aquinas school, so he's a true believer in another sense too.
Okay, even though the Catholic bishops denounced him for being a cold-hearted
the Catholic bishops are Democrats. Who've been denouncing the president and constantly denounced Democrats. That's
but
pre-HHS mandate.
No, but the Catholic thing is very significant.
They've been mugged by reality, some of those Catholic bishops.
A lot of these – you identified, David, the white working-class men. And I think that an underreported story right now is the – blowback effect of, you know, the administration deciding to create this so-called war on women after the Supreme Court came out with a 9-0 ministerial exception decision. 4 days later, Kathleen Sebelius says, there's no place for religion in American life. We are now, the government, going to tell you what you may and may not believe. That has not helped the administration with Catholic voters. And Ryan went to Georgetown University very wisely, I think in late April, early May, gave a very thoughtful speech. He was not supported by the Georgetown faculty. They immediately attacked him. That's fine. That's a badge of honor, as is the attack from the bishops.
Let me lay out specifically what I think is the challenge. I actually think Paul Ryan is going to be an asset to the ticket from a personality and an energy standpoint. Yesterday, he made Mitt Romney, you know, actually have a more exciting personality, which was an impressive feat. But the problem is, and where I see the issue coming up, is not Paul Ryan personally. And I agree with Craig. Paul Ryan will give great difficulty to Joe Biden in that debate. The problem is, Paul Ryan's not going to be the one defending the Ryan budget. Mitt Romney is going to have to own and eat the entire Ryan budget in a way that he hasn't to date. And in doing so, Mitt Romney is, A, a terrible messenger to defend all of the tax cuts to the wealthy, and, B, is not a very compelling person.
We're going to go to calls in just a moment, but I want to ask a couple of questions about the also-rans and what impact that might have in the Electoral College. And that is Rob Portman rejected in Ohio. Does that hurt Romney in Ohio, the ability to carry Ohio?
I don't think so. I think Portman may have been a marginal plus, but I don't think any of these swing states are going to, including Wisconsin, are going to be decided by who's got second chair.
Does the rejection of Marco Rubio cause a bigger political issue?
No,
Rubio was one of your favorites.
I was sort of for Rubio, but I was for everybody at the same time. And I think that,
it's like a moderate Republican.
Yes, right. Cover your bases.
I think that, there's a very strong Republican organization down there in Florida. And I think that there was a lot of consideration given to Marco Rubio. I don't think any of these people, Portman or Rubio, Christie or whoever else, I don't think anybody was rejected. I think that people looked at this, and as Dan said, they wanted to elevate the campaign to Hispanic voters.
They're definitely disappointed. Definitely disappointed about it. Republican Hispanics hoped that he would be there to be able to, you know, balance out that vote, which is obviously extremely going to the Democrats.
Yeah, you know, I disagree with that. And I think when Republicans play gender or race identity politics, they are putting themselves in a bad place. That is the province of the Democrats. Although even they have shown that it doesn't quite work. If it was so easy, if it was linear, that, you know, Hispanic person that's attractive and accomplished, and that translates immediately into votes, then Bill Richardson would would be our president.
Well, yeah, Geraldine Ferraro would have been vice president.
It's a lot more complicated than that. There's more variables at play.
Well, and clearly Republicans didn't play gender politics in 2008 with the selection of Sarah Palin, who was the most qualified person in the country.
Yeah, I know. I know you want to relitigate the 2008 race because the 2012 doesn't look quite as good.
You're saying Democrats don't play gender – Republicans don't play gender politics.
He said when they do, they get to a bad place.
That's precisely what I said.
I would agree.
And I think we know the bad. And I think we know the bad place he was talking about. By the way, the one thing, 1-800-723-8029. We got a full board of lights. We will hear from them when we come back, and we'll also debate the question: Is America ready to have a Green Bay Packer fan a heartbeat away from the presidency? Back shortly. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us this evening. Two Democrats and two Republicans join us to talk about the selection of Paul Ryan to be Mitt Romney's running mate. David Lundy is one Democrat. He is the president of Aileron Communications and a veteran political operative in the Chicagoland area. Chris Roebling also joins us. He is in the public affairs for Jane C. Thompson and Associates. Once upon a time was the executive director of the Republican Party in Cook County. And also joining us is our Craig Sauter, who's written numerous books on politics and conventions and is an associate professor at DePaul University. And also you have your own firm with your brother, and you do Democratic consultancy.
Right. Yeah. Sauter Communications.
Sauter Communications. And Dan Proft joins us. He is a talk show host for WLS Radio, our flagship station here in Chicago, and also was a candidate in the Republican nomination for governor of Illinois. 1-800-723-8029. Just very quickly, does anybody going to hold his Green Bay Packer, at least in the Chicagoland area? This really is an Illinois-Wisconsin battle.
Since the Romney campaign had already written off Chicago and Illinois, I guess it's okay.
Go for the gold.
But I would watch out in Minnesota. If anybody's tallying Minnesota in the final electoral vote column, watch out.
Well, and Congressman Joe Walsh will be very excited because he confessed on this very program with you and I, Bruce, that he's a Green Bay Packer fan. So I'm sure he's quite pleased.
You know, you just put the nail in it.
Those Wisconsin people.
That was the plan.
That was Dave's plan.
They ask, how are the Vikings and car thieves the same?
How are
neither of them have titles.
Hi-yo.
And, you know, it's a serious issue.
Right.
We need a rim shot for this show.
Let us now go back to call or two calls. Let's go to Ken in Seabrook, New Hampshire, listening to us on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Go ahead, Ken. Nice to hear from New Hampshire.
Good evening. Thanks for taking my call.
Good.
By the way, I was in Chicago this summer. I went to watch the Red Sox play the Cubs. I had a great time out there.
Very good.
I don't want to start be too picky, but I'm not hearing a lot of pushback on the Democratic side here, because there's a couple of statements that have been made that I thought should have been refuted right off the top. Because once you allow a certain message and image to persist, it almost creates an era where you can create a false equivalency. So let me go back to way back at the beginning when the guy on the Republican side talked about Obama demonizing and polarizing. And I'm trying to remember, maybe I've been paying attention, and I'm in a market, by the way, that gets a lot of these ads. And I'm wondering, is it demonizing to point out that the guy in a lower tax rate than most Americans, is it demonizing or polarizing to ask why the man running for president won't even release as many tax returns? I'm trying to think about the demonizing and the polarizing. And if that doesn't get refuted, then the listeners just sit there saying, yeah, well,
okay,
he's been doing that.
Ken, let's let Chris Roebling was the one that said it. Let's let him defend his words.
Well, I think the demonizing part comes in when you're accusing people of being a felon or when you're accusing people of being involved in the loss of this innocent spouse's life, sort of implying murder. When you're talking about when you're talking about the wholesale destruction of a social safety net, which is really what the propaganda piece of the Democratic Party known as the New York Times came out with this morning, citing the extremism of Paul Ryan. What extremism, we're not really sure. But extremism is the order of the day. And that is their effort to demonize at that overall level, individually, whether it is on immigration or on women's rights or on any of the – on gay rights or on any of the subsidiary issues,
but also, well,
there's
but
a demonization
you,
that's also you, going on.
The word has been demonization, but again, it's defining your opponent. Demonization may be taking it a little bit far down the line. But again, it has gone pretty far already in this campaign.
Look the whole idea that Mitt Romney, who destroyed one opponent after another with overwhelming money in the primary, is now whining about being defined by his opponent because he's got a lousy campaign is pretty laughable. In terms of demonizing, Chris, it's not demonizing to say that Paul Ryan's budget proposes to convert what is currently a very good, very well-functioning system in the Medicare system.
It's bankrupt.
It is bankrupt in about 15 years.
Well,
12. It is not demonizing to point out that what you're proposing on your side is to eliminate it and instead replace it with a voucher for private insurance.
Excuse me, gentlemen.
That's simply false. That is a fact. It is intended to replace Medicare with a private insurance voucher. Period. And so you're going to stick people who love their Medicare right now. Don't let the government interfere with my Medicare. You're going to stick people who love their Medicare into private insurance, which I can tell you, I've got two parents I'm dealing with serious health issues on Medicare, and it is a hell of a lot easier than what I deal with my family and private insurance.
Yeah, private.
Well, two things. One is the demonization is – the issue is not so much demonizing Mitt Romney. He's just a politician. The issue and what I find morally dubious from the Obama administration and his – retinue of flacks is the demonization of the American people. Wide swaths of the American people. Chris mentioned some of the examples, but you could go back to the Sandra Fluck nonsense and the manufactured war on women, the Republicans standing athwart the Dream Act, not wanting poor immigrant children to get a college education. Nonsense. Even frankly, the you didn't build that. It's a demonization of the productive people in this country, the entrepreneurial class. So you can demonize politicians all day long. I shed crocodile tears over politicians being called names. But when you demonize the American people, particularly the American people that are playing by the rules and getting fleeced by a government they finance, then I think it's problematic.
Chris.
Yeah, I agree. What he said.
Okay. Let's go to Alan in Youngstown, Ohio on WKBN. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I can't believe the slate of candidates we had to begin with for president. And I'd like to give you the headline that they could print on this selection of Mr. Ryan, who I love fiscal conservatives, but this country isn't prepared for one. So the headline would be, Scrooge nominates Grinch to run and race against Santa Claus.
Do you write headlines for the New York Times?
Let him finish. Go ahead, Alan.
I mean, this president, he's just so concerned. He's such a caring president. As long as he's not spending his money, I could be real concerned, too. If I'm spending your money, I can be real concerned about carbon footprints while I'm flying all across the world, leaving the hugest carbon footprints ever left in the history of mankind. I mean, this man is as phony as a $3 bill. Mm-hmm. There is no way in the world he should be able to win re-election. Mm-hmm. And yet, you've picked a man, Ryan, who I think is running for Pope. What is this stuff with this antiquated form of not believing in birth control or giving a woman a right for an abortion to bring more unwanted children into this world? Come on. And you are absolutely frightening all the oldsters off. Somebody has to make them understand, like one of your people on the panel obviously doesn't understand. We are broke. Every dime we're getting into Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security is money we're printing up or borrowing from somebody. We don't have any money. So how in the world can you say it's good for 12 more years?
David, you were the one that said 15 more years.
I'm merely citing some stats out there. But if you're concerned about fiscal conservatism, I would remind you of two facts. Number one, the budget was last balanced under a Democratic president, Bill Clinton. It was balanced because he had higher tax rates on the wealthy and higher tax rates overall. What we have had in the last few years has been a revenue problem. There are spending issues exacerbated by the demands for entitlements with the economic collapse and the housing collapse. But the fiscal conservatism of Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney is a myth.
Copperhill, we're moving on to Copperhill, Virginia on the internet. Steve, listening to us, go ahead. You're on the air.
What a thrill it is to listen to this marvelous discussion.
Thank you.
I just want to say that the thing that I'm most excited about with Paul Ryan is that in this one choice, we are able to combine the intellectual wing, if you will, of the Republican Party, and there are those that say there's no such thing. But of course, if there is a component of the intellectual wing, Paul Ryan will be at the very top of it, with the, for lack of better, whether it's true or not, the perceived lack of intellectualism of the base, which is to say the Tea Party folks. And we don't. So in other words, for all of Sarah Palin's merits, she was assailable as not an intellectual. And I think this has done something, and I have not heard anyone address this aspect, where you're able to combine the enthusiasm of the red meat Republican that may or may not be able to pronounce the word pundits correctly.
Right, but when you add the mainstream Republicans and the Wall Street Republicans into that mix, you have quite the ability to bring the entire party base together. Well,
that's absolutely my point.
I think the point is well stated. I want to let Dan elaborate a little bit.
One other thing I would say about Paul Ryan that we haven't discussed yet that I think is important, and I think it's going to have great appeal, including to young voters, but just basically appeal to the huge appetite that exists in the body politic to be leveled with. To be treated with the respect that adults deserve. And that is that Ryan is not a cake eater like so many past Republicans who get put on their hind legs by the cheap shots of Democrats and by the demagoguery that some of which we've heard tonight. Bob Dole was one of those. John McCain was one of those. To some extent, Mitt Romney is one of those. Paul Ryan is more of a street fighter. And I think that is going to enervate the party, the base, independents who want to be leveled with just as much as anything else we've discussed tonight. That approach.
He's an intellectual gut fighter.
That's right.
Which takes the best of the various elements of the party. Chris, I'm going to let you follow through on that, but we do have to pause. 1-800-723-8029. Lots of calls tonight weighing in on Paul Ryan, the Republican candidate for vice president, about to be in Tampa in a couple of weeks. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. One other observation, then we're going to go back to calls. With I think what I'm about to say is correct, but I may be wrong. But I'll say it anyway.
Like Harry Reid.
Paul Ryan may be the first basic staffer who has made it to the vice presidential nomination.
Dick Cheney.
You're right. See, yeah. I was wrong already.
Dick Cheney actually worked for Warren Knowles.
Yeah. That's right.
Worked for Warren Knowles in Wisconsin before Paul Ryan was born.
So being a staffer gives you usually some heft.
It's one entryway. It's one entryway, but it's not.
But not many of them go. I mean, obviously, Rahm Emanuel was another one.
You can learn the issues that way pretty well.
Yeah. Let's go back to calls. Let's go to Dave in Arcata, California, listening to us on KGOE. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Well, you know, my opinion on this thing is that if what the Republicans are trying to do is sew up the greedy 1%, the selection of Paul Ryan was a good one. I think he will appeal to them big time. If there's any hope to appeal to the masses of voters who care about their own interests, I think it was a big mistake.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's call off the election.
Well, the greedy 1%, boy, it's funny because I live in Chicago, and Obama was in town for a lot of birthday party fundraisers. Some of the streets were closed. And, boy, those birthday party fundraisers, hanging around with a lot of 1%ers. So I'm not sure that either party has cornered the market on 1%ers in terms of who is in the inner circles.
And
I know it's a fun little rhetorical device that that Occupy Wall Street people use.
True,
it's nonsense.
I don't think it is true at all. People are going to react to it, right?
Right. Go ahead.
He's saying how people are going to react, and the perception is pretty much that, you know, it's a choice for the rich.
I want to tell you, I think that nothing could be further from the truth. And I think that I had this impression this morning watching the George Stephanopoulos program and watching the establishment canonical Washington liberals to a person express befuddlement at this whole thing. I think there truly are different realities out there. And I think it's 1979/1980. I mean, I think that this not you can't go too far down that road. But I want to tell you, I think the people, the number that matters right now around the country in the key states is the Obama approval number. It's not the head-to-head. It's not the Romney-Obama number. And Obama's approval numbers are low because people do not like the fact that one in seven Americans is unemployed, that we've had 8% unemployment for more than 40 months, that we've spent our way. Obama has more debt on his watch than any other individual.
Chris, but a reality the Republicans have got to deal with is the likability factor for the top of the ticket is still pretty good for the.
I'm going to tell you.
I understand, but one thing in addition to that we haven't talked about, but it kind of fits with the demonization discussion we were having previously. Obama is trying to do something that's very difficult to do. One, for an incumbent to make the election a referendum on his challenger, that's difficult. The other thing that's difficult is to win a national election in this country based solely on class envy. This is an aspirational country. This is a country that believes if you start a business, then actually you did build that. So that's what this 1% blathering is all about. It's about
class. It's a country that's
Greg,
very.
Greg, excuse Greg, go ahead.
It's also a country that's afraid of the economic situation that's facing them, and fear will drive them towards, you know, some kind of security.
What is Obama's plan?
Well, fear.
That is the one thing that the Ryan choice is forcing the Democrats to do. They are going to have to talk about the future as opposed to, you know, the accomplishments of the past.
Look, there's no question the president's going to lay out a vision for the country in the future at the convention.
He's been holding it back.
Frankly, Mitt Romney hasn't laid out his vision for the future other than I'm not Obama. So let's get over this nonsense that the president is exclusively not laying out his vision. In terms of the top 1%, there is no question. You run the numbers. You do the math. The top 1% have made out like bandits. And as somebody who aspires to be a top 1%er, good for them, but not good for the rest of the country, because it has hurt everybody else.
How
has it hurt everybody else?
Even the president. I mean,
Wait a second.
What do you accomplish? What do you accomplish by being punitive to the 1%? I'm not, or even the 5%, or the top 20%. I'm not clear. Even Obama concedes that just removing the tax cuts for the top 1%, $250,000 and over, it doesn't do anything for deficit or debt reduction.
Were the Clinton budget? Were the Clinton tax rates punitive to the 1%? No,
they cut the capital gains tax rate.
That's right. They were fair tax rates. 39.6% is the top. It's exactly.
So it's about fairness.
Me,
it's not about
it
the debt.
Exactly. No, it is not. It is about the debt. It is about the deficit.
So
the
what
budget was balanced. By the way, over every Republican objection in 1993, I remember that debate and watched Dick Armey and Newt Gingrich and Bob Dole say, there's not only going to be a recession in this country if you pass these tax increases, there's going to be a depression. Republicans would like the entire national consciousness to forget that we've done this once
before.
Okay,
so you still didn't answer the Bush approach.
We have tried the Clinton approach.
What do you call the last four years?
It's not a Clinton approach. The reason that we had balanced budgets is because we had an explosion because of the third wave of the digital age in the 90s. But even disregarding that for a second, if it's about fairness, what's the number? What's the number, Dave? Is it 40%? Is it 50%? Is it 70%?
It is about balancing the budget. It is about fiscal conservatism.
How much money do we get?
39.6%.
How much money do we get from that?
We need to have top rate.
How much money do we get from 39.6% for the top 1%? How much money?
No. You are talking about... You know, Dan, I love how you love to mix up numbers here and there. The fact is, we're not talking about the top rate on millionaires. We're talking about the top rate on people over 250.
How much does it generate? What's the number?
It generates hundreds of billions of dollars over the next 10 years.
Right. Ladies and gentlemen, the campaign of 2012 has been engaged. You're hearing it tonight right here beyond the Beltway in Chicago, just a mile from the Obama reelection campaign. We'll open the window so they make sure they can hear the debate this evening. 1-800-723-8029 if you're listening around the country. Another full hour with these four dynamic guests. If you're watching us on television, you can only dream about where this next hour on radio is going to go. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, continuing into hour number two. Tonight featuring commentary by Republicans Dan Proft and Chris Roebling, and Democrats David Lundy and R. Craig Sauter. Phone lines open at 1-800-723-8289, 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, btb@museum.tv. And in case you're just joining us now because you perhaps were watching Romney and Ryan on 60 Minutes this evening, and we have the distinction of being opposite 60 Minutes every week.
And you're doing great with that.
Isn't that a great thing?
Yeah.
We're opposite the most popular television show of all time, perhaps. But again, if you were watching them tonight and want to call in and offer your instant analysis of their appearance, do give us a call. In the first hour, we were debating some of the issues and some of the pluses and minuses of having Paul Ryan as the running mate, whether or not that is going to make this a dirtier campaign. I think most people would agree that it's probably likely to elevate the campaign, where maybe there can be some real discussions of real issues, because Mr. Ryan is known as an idea guy. You may not like his ideas, but at least they're out there, they're printed. And again, in a campaign, there's probably a lot in that plan that will that should be explained, may have to be defended, and that's what campaigns, at least in some ways, can be about, and get away from some of the personal attacks that have sort of dominated the campaign over the last several months. But in doing a little research for the broadcast this evening, one of the pieces that I ran across on the internet was an interview that Paul Ryan gave to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel a couple of years ago, actually late last year, in talking about what he was trying to do as a member of Congress from the district. Obviously, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel covers the district that Paul Ryan represents. And I'm going to read just it's an extended quote, but he was talking about, and he was explaining to the editorial board what his goal was and what he was doing, and looking a little bit ahead to the future of the campaign of 2012. And he had this to say, quote, "Part of my thinking is doing the budget and doing what we're doing in 2011 is to raise the bar and standards, so whoever is the nominee is going to have to be someone that meets those standards, so we don't just give it to the next guy in line. So that 2012 is a very clear election. All those past elections have been muddled elections, sort of muddled personality contests, different shades of the same color. We need a clear referendum election so that when we win, which is obviously our scenario, we have the moral obligation and the moral authority to fix this problem the way we propose to do it. This is a Churchill moment. We see the storm on the horizon. We know it's coming. The American people would be fundamentally choosing, possibly in some lasting way, between the competing worldviews of the left and the right. Everybody knows this is a politically risky territory. Republicans have seen battle scars from past entitlement reforms. That's why some argue that we should downplay bold agendas and simply wage a campaign focused solely on the president and his party. I firmly disagree. Boldness and clarity offer the greatest opportunity to create a winning coalition. We will not only win the next election, we have a unique opportunity to sweep and remake the political landscape." End of quote. Paul Ryan to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And again, if you want to read that, it is available online. This clearly is a guy who has methodically talked about drawing the line in the sand and having a robust debate. And that's what Mitt Romney gave America yesterday.
There is no doubt that Mitt Romney and his campaign read that exact same quote, and they've been reading all of his quotes. And that doesn't mean that it's suddenly the Paul Ryan campaign, or that the Paul Ryan budget is something that Mitt Romney has. It's the Mitt Romney campaign, but Romney is saying there's a problem. I've got an approach. Let's go at it. And the problem on the Democratic side is that they've created the problem, and they don't want people to talk about it, and they've got no solution. Craig, you said it in the last hour. There is no solution. Barack Obama has failed in the elemental political task of putting together enough votes in the U.S. Senate to come up with even a budget. He walks away from his own commission dealing with these issues.
Craig, is the decision that was made yesterday, is this a decision that you think is very important for the country? That it's clear. Just speak to the last paragraph. Elections are about muddling the confusion.
If it actually did what he claims it will do, elevate the debate, make the choices very clear, then it does help the country because the country is going to decide. And
can you have an intelligent debate?
Can we have an?
No. Here's my question to the Democrats: can you have an intelligent debate without scaring people? David Lundy.
You can have an intelligent debate if you're honest about what the facts are on our side and on their side. I want to take a second to comment because I actually have looked at the selection of Paul Ryan exactly the way Paul Ryan did.
I know.
I think this opportunity is really remarkable because we have had too many elections where the direction is kind of unclear, where somebody gets elected, but it's based on nonsense. It's based on Pledge of Allegiance and ACLU cards. It's not based on a specific mandate. I think you have, in this election, the clearest competing worldview choice
since
for
Goldwater.
The American people since Goldwater. And I think it's going to work out pretty similar, not as good for the Democrats as Goldwater did. But I just think that, you know, we need to make a choice. The reason that the left and the right are unified in one thing today, which is that we're all very excited about the Paul Ryan pick, is that we both think we're right. I think that the American people, upon hearing the choices that I would like to lay out for them, they will agree with me. Dan and Chris are absolutely convinced with total moral certitude that if you are honest with the American people, they will agree with them. But to your question, Bruce, about can you have an intelligent debate without scaring people, the answer is probably not, because these choices are scary. You're talking
The other thing that's going to happen, you can't have an honest debate without scaring people because you're not going to – because if only one side's participating. I mean, the Obama campaign is a campaign to scare people. So that's going to be difficult. I mean, they're balanced budget hawks now. They have 3 years of trillion-dollar deficits. They don't pass the laugh test.
But what's driving people towards the Ryan choice? It's the specter of a total collapse of the United States. So fear is actually driving both.
Go back just a few months ago. We had Democrats on this show for month after month after month. They couldn't wait to get that referendum on Governor Walker in Wisconsin. They were going to rally. They brought people from all over the country. They got the fight they wanted, and they were handed their lunch.
Well, and not just once. This is very important.
Three times in a row.
Well, so they lost in the legislature. They lost on the judicial side. They lost in the judicial elections. Then they lost on the state Senate elections. Then they lost.
They
won a couple of the state Senate, but not enough to change the outcome. And so now what you're talking about is if you're going to write.
Usually a majority changes the outcome.
If that's going to be writ large, you are looking not at 64, you're looking at 80.
Back shortly, 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont from coast to coast and border to border, talking tonight about Paul Ryan on the Republican ticket with Mitt Romney.
That's all.
From Milwaukee, Wisconsin to Malibu, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway on America's great radio stations, as well as Sirius and XM satellite radio. In about 15 minutes, we're going to get a live report from Waukesha.
Yes, that's not where the live report's coming from.
Somewhere up in Wisconsin. We're going to get a report from Craig Gilbert, who's the Washington Bureau Chief of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And let us go to calls. Let's go to Joe. He's in Schaumburg, Illinois. He's been waiting a long time. Sorry for the long wait. Go ahead, Joe. You're listening to us on 89 WLS.
Yes, hi, Bruce. Hi, panel. As an Obama supporter, I'm salivating over this pick too. Because tell me, Republicans on the panel, what foreign policy experience does Paul Ryan have? I know that the Republican Party, they're all gung ho about foreign policy experience. Neither him or Mitt Romney have a smidget of foreign policy experience. And another thing too, it's going to be let's let him respond,
Dan.
Okay.
Well, I would say two things. One is he has as much foreign policy experience as Barack Obama did prior to running for president. And number two, we'll see how he does on the foreign policy issues when he squares off against Joe Biden. I'm looking very forward to those conversations. So we'll see how he does.
Joe Biden,
foreign policy expert Joe Biden.
And they have 4 years less than Barack Obama.
Lynn Sweet tells me that Joe Biden has a great strength in foreign policy.
Yes, well, you know, this is the same Joe Biden who said that he was against the Bin Laden raid. So I mean, this is
the Joe
this
Biden
is a
who wanted to partition Iraq.
A fascinating.
That was a great one.
Fascinating no. figure. So we'll see how Paul Ryan holds.
Go to the next point.
Okay. Well. Mr. Prof, you said that President Obama's approval ratings are low right now. I mean, is it your guy Mitt Romney? This guy can't get past 50% of his life dependent on it? I mean, come on, get real. This guy's a terrible candidate.
Were you a Clinton supporter? Where were his majorities? Let me think. 1990. Oh, I'm sorry. 1992. He didn't get a majority. Okay. Well, wait a minute. 1996. Oh no. I'm sorry. In 1996, Bill Clinton did not get. So after, Joe and Schomburg,
49.99.
You should go back to campaign school. Okay.
Listen, you know what? After today, they're going to start campaigning solo.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Now it's going to be interesting to see what Mitt Romney what he says about the Ryan budget, because the majority of the people in this country, according to polls, are dead set against it.
Joe, I'll tell you something. He's going to say, I'm Mitt Romney, I'm running for president, and it's going to be the Romney budget.
Well, no, he was. And by the way, the vice president, again, his foreign policy experience, we know, is he talks about it all the time.
Biden or
Joe
Ryan.
Biden.
Joe Biden.
Joe Biden.
Right. Biden keeps telling the Mirror he's
Joe
a foreign policy
Joe
expert.
Joe Biden is the man who said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Right.
He said that during the 1988 campaign. And then he said, I will go to Korea. Said them both. Then he realized that someone else had already said those words.
He was
poor old Joe.
Right. No.
He was born with a plagiarized speech where his brain was supposed to be.
That's unfair. He was just reading what Neil Kinnock had wrote.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
He was the first guy to go to grade school in a thousand
years. We had
more time
to debunk all that, but I'll let it go.
Oh yeah. You think so? Next time.
If we have somebody brave enough to defend Joe Biden, I think we should let him.
No, he's defending plagiarism.
Oh, it's Fareed Zakaria.
It's
right
the
here
age
on
of the
Beyond
Internet.
The Belt Radio. Another
side
liberal
of this
foreign
program.
Policy expert.
Charlotte in Arlington Heights. Go ahead. Listening to us on WLS.
Hi. Paul Ryan has been in Congress for many years. I believe at least 12 years. Is that right, Dan?
14
years. I'm sure he's legislated. All this legislative experience has given him a knowledge of foreign affairs. Barack Obama, if I'm not mistaken, 3 months in the U.S. Senate, he starts running for president.
Yeah, because he was so qualified. That was because he was so qualified.
But now he's the commander. Let me ask you this question. Finish your point, though, Charlotte, because I interrupted your nickel. Go ahead.
But just he's been on the Washington scene for years. He knows what's happening in the world. Laws have to involve some knowledge, hearings, debate. He's perfectly aware of what's happening.
Are you worried about him on the international stage, Dave?
No, I'm more worried about Mitt Romney after his foray into London and insulting the our British allies and all the follow-ups he had in the entire trip.
By repeating the headlines of British tabloids.
Romney had the lowest bar humanly possible. All he had to do was go over there and not insult people, and he couldn't pull it off. Come on, you guys, it was embarrassing. Robling, you're the one who told me, Robling, that foreign policy is about competence. And Mitt Romney will demonstrate in this trip how competent he is on foreign policy.
I think he did a brilliant job.
It was a disaster because the foreign press said so.
Everything you need to know about Barack Obama's foreign policy experience comes down to the fact that he was the chairman of the subcommittee in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee that handled Central Asia. He did not hold one hearing on Central Asia during his entire tenure, which lasted about 14 minutes. And then he goes off and he campaigns saying, the good war is Afghanistan. Afghanistan is the good war. Now, the only people who supported him on that, by the way, were guys like me. I'm publicly supporting the guy on Afghanistan. His whole party runs away, and now he's sixes and sevens over what to do with Afghanistan. Barack Obama is a disaster on the world stage.
Joanne in Schaumburg, Illinois. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call, Bruce.
Good.
I just wanted to weigh in on this tonight because I have to say I've been following Paul Ryan for years. I remember watching him at that health care summit that they held, I think, at the Blair House with Boehner and McCain and Roskam and Paul Ryan and Nancy Pelosi on one side of the president, Harry Reid on the other, and he squashed everybody except Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan held his own with the president, pointing out the pitfalls of his health care plan.
Right on.
Paul Ryan is brilliant. He is the man we need. We've lost our credit rating here.
Yep.
40% of our wealth is gone in America under President Obama. I think they need to start focusing on what caused that downfall with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and Barney Frank and Chris Dodd and the Democratic Congress and Senate in 2006 through 2008 when we fell apart. I also think they have to point out what's in the Obamacare. The fact we'll no longer have relationships with our doctors making decisions about our health care. About the fact they took out $500 million out of Medicare to pass that plan. And Obama is coming down in the polls. He's coming down in the polls with the black community over his stance on gay marriage, which they disapprove of. He's got ministers speaking out against him that they will not endorse him, the black ministers. He's attacked the Catholic Church. He bypasses the Constitution. He bypasses the laws. He is an abject failure as president.
I want to cede my time to Joanne.
About the economy.
Craig.
The Jobs Commission
Craig respond. Pick any one of those attacks.
Any of the attacks, I forgot them. Go ahead.
An attack. It was just a chronicling of the Obama administration.
A recitation of failure, which is what the Obama administration
was.
That's why they don't talk about
it.
It
was a fantasy recitation of failure. The idea that the Democrats are the ones who caused the housing crisis that led to and the Democrats are the ones that caused the deregulation that allowed Wall Street to run amok, that the Democrats are the ones that allowed all of the policies that began in the Bush administration to take hold, it's just utter fantasy. Wait for Mitt Romney to go on a national debate stage and attack Barack Obama on Obamacare when even Mitt Romney's own spokesperson in attacking the Obama Priorities USA Super PAC ad said, well, if that person had lived in Mitt Romney's Massachusetts, they'd have had health care. Excuse me, Obamacare is Romney care on a national stage. This is going to be a very interesting debate. Hopefully it'll be more substantive than some of those points.
Kurt in Fort Wayne, Indiana, listening to us on WOWO. Whoa, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm one of the guys who has not been an Obama supporter so far, mostly because of the foreign policy mandate. I see that we have, for a majority of the time, the current administration has kind of let the State Department dictate our foreign policy and make decisions not necessarily on behalf of most of the American constituency. So who is Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan projected to take as Secretary of State?
Well, I don't know that anybody knows that right now, including, for instance, perhaps even Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan, and it's really Mitt Romney, not Paul Ryan, should they get elected. I think that what you're going to see is a return to realism. I think what you're going to see in American foreign policy under a Romney-Ryan administration is a return to some understanding of the fact that the world is a very dangerous place and that America has vital interests for itself and for its allies, and that the projection of American power at this moment is about the only thing between us and a very violent, very dangerous, very disrupted, balkanized global system. We've got very serious challenges going on. We're seeing it right now with the drought right here in our home. The Midwest is causing food prices to rise substantially around the world. that could result in social unrest. And the Obama administration has been slavishly inclined towards ethanol, and the Obama administration has done nothing about free trade or very little, and it's been kicking and screaming. So I think you're going to see realism coming back into America's relations with the world, not delusion about a restart with Russia that ends up with Russia cynically playing Assad against his own people in Syria to their own detriment.
On that note, by the way, at this very moment, Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan are campaigning in Wisconsin. When we come back, we will get a live report from Craig Gilbert of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's on the scene. He'll share his thoughts with us when Beyond the Beltway continues from Chicago. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us now. We now head north to Wisconsin, where Craig Gilbert is joining us. He's been a guest on this program before. He's the Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Craig, nice to have you with us on Beyond the Beltway again.
Thanks for having me.
Where are you reporting from this evening?
From Waukesha, Wisconsin, where the new Republican ticket had kind of a love-in. Republican voters in Wisconsin in the heartbed of Waukesha County.
What sort of a turnout was it? Obviously, say a raucous welcome, but how large was the crowd?
Big. Some of the estimates upwards of 10,000.
Oh, holy cow!
And was there anything new said this evening that had not been heard before in the campaign?
Well, a couple things. You know, Paul Ryan spoke first and got kind of emotional. I mean, it was a real, you know, a lot of affection, certainly, for him in the crowd, a lot of family, a lot of political colleagues, you know, kind of everybody in the Republican political class in Wisconsin turned out, his House colleagues, the governor, former governor, a senator, and also, you know, a lot of people he knew in the crowd, so a very warm welcome for him and kind of, I think, a heartfelt remarks on his part. And then when Governor Romney spoke, he really kind of tore into the Obama campaign at one point saying, take your campaign out of the gutter, Mr. President, which seemed to sort of signal kind of a new line of counterattack on his part.
And big applause lines in each case?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a pretty, you know, a lot of energy here. You know, people, certainly Republicans are thrilled to have own on the ticket, and as you know, this is a state that's pretty amped up politically, and it's been through a lot in the last year, so people are kind of on a political footing to begin with, and they're getting warmed up for this election, and now they have a local boy on the ticket to cheer for.
I just read in the last segment, I read the interview that was done with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel by Paul Ryan last year. I don't know whether you were sitting in on that interview or not, in which he really talked about what his MO was last year and what he was really trying to set in place for campaign 2012, which was a real, you know, line in the sand stand or campaign. He called it a Churchill moment. Is that the general sense of the voters in Wisconsin, that especially having been through the brutal recall of your governor up there, is Wisconsin is in a fighting mode to stand up for their political beliefs?
Yeah, and that was actually a conversation I had with him last year, and so it's two things. It's partly him. It's really his. It's kind of the way he looks at the world, the way he looks at these elections. I mean, he's all about, you know, let's turn this, and he sort of sees this as kind of a grand clash of values and ideas and ideologies. That's the way he looks at things. He's a very ideological guy. So, you know, his concept of the election, which is really the same kind of approach that a lot of the people that were pushing Ryan for Veep have articulated in the last week, was, you know, let's estimate this, let's draw lines really sharply and really starkly, and let's make this about something big. So it's coming, I think, that sort of comes from Ryan's personal approach and the way he looks at these things, but also everything you said about the state is true. I mean, people, it's a very polarized place right now. It was before the recalls, but it's all the more so now.
What in your conversation with state Democrats, because obviously Ryan has done very well in his congressional district. He's shown some ability to reach out to blue collar and independent voters. Is there a fear amongst the Democrats in the state of Wisconsin that the way this guy has played in the home state might be catching fire nationally?
Well, I think right now they're optimistic about Wisconsin. I think they're optimistic about the national race. I think that's just, you know, they're looking at the polls, and Obama's been ahead in almost all the public polling in Wisconsin. He's obviously got an advantage nationally as well, not as much of an advantage as he has in Wisconsin. So despite what was kind of a disaster in terms of the recall, both the decision to do it in the end and the outcome, they think they're in okay shape in November, certainly at the presidential level, and we also have a Senate race that's going to be very competitive, and that's actually turned out so far pretty good for the Democrats, too, because they're united behind their candidate, Tammy Baldwin, and you've got a pretty messy, contentious Republican primary that goes on the ballot on Tuesday.
By the way, just on that particular subject, has Paul Ryan weighed in on that Republican primary for the Senate involving the former governor?
Yeah, he and the member, I think all the members of the Wisconsin congressional delegation who are Republican stayed neutral, and they attributed that to the fact that the state, there was no official endorsement by the party at the state party convention. We do have an endorsement process, and no one got a sufficient supermajority to get the endorsement. So I think it was probably a convenient excuse for Paul Ryan and others to stay neutral. The governor also stayed neutral, but Paul Ryan has gone out of his way to sort of say nice things. Defend, for example, Tommy Thompson from some of his critics on the right, as has the governor, publicly defended him without endorsing him.
Dan Proft from our Beyond the Beltway team is here. He has got a question for you.
I'm just curious if there was any specific counterpunching by Paul Ryan or Romney to the kind of line of characterizations that have come out since the announcement about Paul Ryan, the architect of the radical House Republican budget, the whole granny off a cliff line of attack, if they address that straight away?
Not so directly. I mean, there were just the thematics certainly they were on offense, but they weren't, they didn't, I would say it wasn't really about rebutting those attacks individually or too directly. It was a lot of offense, and I guess we'll have to wait and hear how they want to respond on those particulars.
As the Washington Bureau Chief of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, you've probably spent a lot of time with Paul Ryan, personally, up close in the conversations you've had with him. What are some points that you can share just personally about the guy as an individual?
Well, he's a very likable, affable guy, very comfortable with the press, very at. He's, not a kind of Bigfoot kind of a politician. He sort of comes across as kind of down to earth. I think he works really hard to give people the impression that he's not, he doesn't sort of put himself on a different level. And he's got a sense of humor. I would say he's a good communicator. I think one of his political assets is while he's a very, very conservative and philosophical and ideological conservative, he can talk to people outside of his conservative base, on their own terms. I mean, he knows how to communicate, I think, with independent voters, even to some degree with Democrats, without sounding too much like an ideologue. And he also I think he takes pride in not kind of personalizing the political debate, not being kind of a grenade tosser or a name caller. I mean, he can be slashing to a degree in terms of the substance of his criticisms of Democratic policy, but he doesn't. I think his reputation, even across the aisle, for being a civil, collegial guy.
I realize that reporters such as yourself do not make political endorsements, but based on what you know, and certainly on the air this evening, on this group, you know him better than anyone else. And the one thing that has not come up yet is, does he pass the commander-in-chief criteria? Is to be a heartbeat away if he ever were to become? Does he pass that test for you personally?
Well, I think he's very capable, and he's a smart guy, and he's a good guy. It's an interesting question for me just because of the youth. And I think one of the interesting things to watch in this campaign will be, how does he come across to people? It's sort of a double-edged sword, right? I mean, some people get energized, and other people may look at him, because he looks probably even a little bit younger than he is,
mm-hmm.
And they may say, well, they may wonder if he has the gravitas, you know, does he look presidential? And so I think it's almost like almost a stylistic thing as much as anything else. I mean, he's certainly not a guy, you know, it's not a deer in the headlights sense with him. I mean, he's very practiced. He's used to, on a daily basis, being in the kind of middle of the policy debate, the national policy debate. So I don't think he's going to give off the vibe of being in over his head. But I think, just on a sort of stylistic and visual level, it'll be interesting to see how people react to his views.
He has somewhat of a golly gee look.
Yeah.
But his personality is more of an aw shucks look, and I think that's part of the charm that Ronald Reagan had, and I think that comes maybe with a small town upbringing. He's comfortable. He's not, as you say, over the top. He's not so impressed with himself as many politicians are. Certainly, a lot of members of Congress, especially, because they're aspiring to get to the upper house. But I thank you very much for your insight. You've been a guest in the past. We appreciate and hope you'll do it again. And that's Craig Gilbert, who's the Washington Bureau Chief from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, reporting tonight from Wisconsin, where he attended the rally this afternoon with Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan. Craig, thanks very much for being with us. 1-800-723-8289. More calls when we come back from Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. If you're listening within the sound of my voice on WLS Radio, our flagship station, this coming Saturday at noon at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, Tom Skilling, Chicago's most popular weather forecaster, who you hear and see on WGN Television Superstation, he will be here to talk about his career at noon this Saturday at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Let's head to calls. Hector, listening to us in St. Charles, Illinois, on our flagship station, WLS. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to make the point that the unemployment number is a very significant number. If we could put, 3 to 5% of the people who are on unemployment back to work, we could grow our way out of our problems and out of our deficit, but you're not going to do that if you're constantly penalizing the successful people in this country. They're the people who are going to put those people back to work. Obama's against it.
Chris Roebling has a comment, and then Dave's got a follow-up. Chris?
Thank you, Hector. I think that it is very important to understand, for instance, the topic of tonight, Paul Ryan, as a devotee and a supporter of Jack Kemp, which I happen to be a Kemp person, Kemp steering committee in Illinois in 1988.
Although hopefully he performs better as a vice presidential candidate.
But the idea of economic growth is central to Ryan's approach, and I think that a lot of the concerns that people have on the left about whether or not there are going to be social services, they have to be subsumed under the prior question, which is, are we going to have an economy that grows? And under the Obama administration, we have become very, very slow growing in our economic situation. And I think what Ryan looks to is reducing tax rates to increase activity. and to increase the receipts. Not that that's his primary objective, but that ends up, and it has every time under John F. Kennedy and Franklin Roosevelt and Ronald Reagan, you reduce the rates, you increase activity, and more money flows to the federal government for the programs that all of you are so interested
Dave.
In.
You know, I need to take on the caller and Dan and Chris and everybody else who keeps wanting to say the president is demonizing people who work. That is a fantasy. It's not true. It's not what he believes, and it's not what he said. He said individual initiative is important, but the entire If You Build It thing was about roads and bridges and community and the substance of what it takes to live in a successful country. And if you want to look back at the past where the investments have been made in this country by Republican presidents like Dwight Eisenhower, it's in exactly the things that Paul Ryan would gut from his budget that would be going forward. Paul Ryan's budget guts everything in the discretionary side for roads, for bridges, for regulation, for education. It absolutely decimates those programs. It decimates the poor. It decimates Medicaid.
It decimates
Medicaid.
I want everybody at home to tune to their New York Times from this morning and open up to page
Our people
number,
do not
yeah,
read
there's
the New York Times.
All four of them?
Our listeners.
What's wrong with your people, Bruce?
Page 12,
New York Times.
Was this the moment you were waiting for, Chris?
Page 12, New York Times.
Hold it up to the microphone.
Yeah, so people can see it.
But you know what? We have to move
go
on.
Go ahead, folks. We've got Check to move that on. New York Times.
We've got to move to Los Angeles, where Keith is listening to us on Sirius Radio. Go ahead.
How you guys doing?
Hi, how are you? Nice to hear from L.A. tonight.
Good. One thing I wanted to mention, as an independent, I'm one of the independents that has kind of lost the hope in change. But looking at the Romney campaign, I didn't really see a lot of excitement, you know, coming out of that campaign. I don't think there was anything super compelling. You know, it's just both sides kind of telling you not to vote for the other guy. The thing I like about the Ryan pick is that, you know, if you look at the both tickets now, he's the only one I feel that's had the political courage to put out a specific plan that certainly is risky and it can be attacked. You know, I that may just put me over the edge to vote for Romney, because it tells me by picking him that Romney is serious about taking on the problems of
right.
this country with someone like Paul Ryan.
I agree. Leaders, whether they are left or right, they must be bold. If you are a bold leader in a campaign, you're going to get the ink, you're going to get the attention, because I think when it comes right down to it, most people, at least, I'm going to say most people, I think most people can understand when they're hearing serious discussion of issues. And I think they appreciate someone that goes out there, even if they're telling them something they may not like.
Make sure you tune in to the Democratic Convention and you'll see the plan for the future there.
Well, are you working on that? You're working on a film for them,
yeah.
right?
Oh, my brother and I are, yeah.
But you're working. Is that the plan, one you're working
no,
on?
No, these
are different ones.
You've had 3 years of work product, 3.5 years of work product from the Obama administration, so it's difficult to just have a plan now 90 days out. But I think you're right, Bruce, and the caller is right as well, which is you can disagree with somebody, but you get credit, and Paul Ryan is going to get credit for being an unpolitician, in a sense, of being willing to talk about issues we know have to be talked about, entitlement programs that we know are not sustainable in their current form. And if you don't like the particulars of Paul Ryan's plan, that's fine. Mitt Romney's not signed on to all of the particulars of that plan. But at least we're going to have a discussion that drives to solutions that sustains those programs. And the left, if all the left is going to offer is the mantra of dog food for seniors and granny off a cliff, they're going to be seen as the unserious people they are, and that's going to redound to the benefit of Romney and Ryan.
On that note, our Republicans tonight have been Dan Proft from WLS Radio and a former candidate for governor in the state of Illinois, Chris Roebling, public relations executive and former executive director of the Republican Party in the county of Cook. David Lundy joins us. He is with Elernon Communications and a public relations consultant for Democratic Party folks. And not all causes liberal, but you do corporate business as well and in the environmental field. And R. Craig Sauter, author and adjunct professor at DePaul University. Thanks very much. It was good to have four guests this evening. 1-800-723-8289. That's the number for next week. Write it down, remember it, and call us next week.
This program is a Gen B production produced in association with WLS Talk Radio. Thanks to Tom Veracruz and Dan Dorfman for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.